This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, Georgia lawmakers push for a Confederate Heritage Month, and financial lenders partner with colleges to profit off of students. Joining our panel are Robert George, editorial writer at the New York Post, Callie Crossley, social and cultural commentator on the Boston television show Beat the Press, and Marcelo Suarez Orozco, professor of globalization and education at NYU. Now, there's Black History Month, Hispanic History Month, Gay and Lesbian Month. There's a lot of months, and now Georgia lawmakers have approved a plan to create a Confederate Heritage Month in the state. The decision discouraged some Black legislators who recently asked for an apology for the state's role in slavery. Now, April was mentioned as being the Confederate History and Heritage Month. It would be a time when citizens of Georgia could honor the memory of the Confederacy and the people who contributed to the cause of, quote, Southern independence. As for the pending apology legislation, one Republican member said he wasn't sure what they would apologize for. Another thought people should not be responsible for the sins of their fathers. Now, that is a long-standing debate. Callie, what's going on here?
I'm a Southerner, so this is of deep interest to me. And I think what's going on is that there have been the folks who have been in support of the flag issue in many other states who are feeling as though there's a part of their history that has not been acknowledged. And this is a way to get around the divisiveness of the flag and come to something that appears to be a little bit more subtle, really about just participation in the war. And shouldn't that be talked about? Because that is, in fact, part of the history of the South. At the same time, to have this going on when there has not been much response to the apology legislation, to me, is appalling. Because after all, an apology really is not about the current action. It's really about the acknowledgement of a history of the large number of Black people in the South. And without acknowledging that, I mean, let's not forget that a lot of this stuff is still not in many textbooks. You know, this is ridiculous. So I'm hoping that, in fact, the Black legislators and others of goodwill will join them in using this as a leverage, really, to bring about that long waited for apology.
Marcelo, it sounds like a case of history versus history. Whose history gets to be told?
Well, it's also a confounding of really incommensurable issues here. The issue of the apology, as it's been framed by a number of the lawmakers, invokes a kind of a personal responsibility idiom that we all feel quite, we all understand and can empathize with. That's very, very different from an official statement by the legislature as a political corpus in regards to a face of the history of the state of Georgia, of the South, of our country. So it is a matter of history versus history, but there's also a need to reflect and to pay attention, not to do farther now symbolic violence to what is a very complicated, a very complex, very painful history.
Robert, I'm thinking of the Dukes of Hazzard, and I did not see the movie, but I understand from reading reviews that the Confederate flag was still on the top of the car in the movie version. That was a huge commercial hit, and that there were all these running jokes about it as a way to deflect tension. Are we at a point in time? I mean, I see Confederate flags in a lot of places. I mean, I've done road trips across this country twice, you know, so I have been through the less Confederate flag places and the more Confederate flag places. This is not technically about the flag, but is it about the idea that this country will not heal from a war that happened well over 100 years ago?
I think it is indeed the latter. I mean, I don't have a problem.
Was that for me, Farai?
That was for Robert.
I don't have a problem per se with people, you know, privately having the flag going around here and there. Now, but speaking, I'm a Northerner. I lived in Washington, D.C., which, you know, is below the Mason-Dixon line. I lived in Washington, D.C. for several years, but I've not really lived in the South, and I can say I just don't necessarily get the South. What I often wonder when these debates are going on, why don't the Northern states just kind of step up and say, look, we won, you lost. Why on earth is this? You have this romance of, you know, the Confederacy and this, and so we can all, you know, worship Southern independence, blah blah blah. One of the reasons the Civil War was fought was with belief in the idea of the Union, and the North won and the South lost, and so we have the Union. This worshiping of the Confederacy gets, for me personally, gets me about as annoyed as some people are upset because they think that the Mexicans are still planning on taking back California and New Mexico. I think it's a little bit ridiculous, and I wish a large section of the country would just grow up.
Well, Marcelo, I mean, could one make a case that California, New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado could go back, to Mexico? I mean, at what point do you say, okay, we are over with this? Or at what point do you say, well, at least I'm bringing up this issue? What strikes me is that on some level, both an apology and a History Month could be seen as symbolic actions, but symbolic of what you claim and what you reject.
Yes, indeed. I think Robert has it right that this is really a romance of defeat, and it really relates to a peculiar psychology, to a peculiar
institution
that takes very powerful symbolic forms at a time when it seems to me the state of Georgia has more important things to address, including, by the way, huge new Hispanic immigration into that state, since we're talking about California and New Mexico, and the likelihood that those states will ever revert back to Mexico is minus zero, absolutely no possibility of that ever happening. It seems to me that there are...
Not with an Austrian-speaking governor.
Not with an Austrian-speaking government. That would make a funny, an Austrian governor of a new Mexican state. But, you know, more seriously now, it seems to me that our country today is facing much more fundamental challenges, and the legislature should be addressing these issues pertinent to health, pertinent to wages, pertinent to education. Let's get with a real agenda.
And I would say also, I mean, I'm tired of the whole apology stuff as well, because I think it is a lot of symbolic sound and fury that signifies absolutely nothing.
Well, you know, I want to reintroduce everybody just in case you're tuning in. This is NPR's News and Notes, and I'm Farai Chidea.
Hi, Farai. We've just been listening.
Thank you. It's a happy Monday. So we've been listening to Robert George, editorial writer at The New York Post, Marcelo Suarez Orozco, professor of globalization and education at New York University, which I used to live very close to, Callie Crossley, social and cultural commentator on the Boston television show Beat the Press. And speaking of universities, Marcelo, what do you think of the whole deal with lenders and college partners? The New York Attorney General Andrew Cuomo revealed information that may not surprise some college students. It seems that dozens of colleges and universities across the country have accepted financial incentives from student loan companies to bring them business. So Citibank and education finance partners profited from $85 billion in federal and private loans students took out last year. Now, the Attorney General Cuomo is still investigating 100 more schools. Now, is this a good thing, a bad thing, that there are lenders who are partnering with colleges?
Well, what doesn't seem right is the special arrangements, especially in the context of the skyrocketing costs of university, college education in our country today. So anything that, in a way, generates incentives for the lending companies to bypass and not to observe the general standard lending practices, any special sweet deals are to be looked at very, very seriously. After all, today, a college education, a university education is really the promise for meaningful status mobility in our society. And anything that interrupts the flow of people with especially limited resources to access college education should be looked at very, very seriously. This is a serious problem, and I think the Attorney General has a very, very interesting case here to pursue moving forward.
So the universities named include Drexel, Syracuse, Pace, Mercy College. I mean, you know, these are good schools. Robert, what do we think about this?
I don't necessarily have a the only problem I have about I have a problem with this. The only problem I have with this is the disclosure question. And as you say, you know, that it may not come as a surprise that this is going on. But I was a little bit surprised, saying, "Oh, really? They've got this too close of an arrangement." At least a couple of the colleges, in a sense, have offices that are on the campus, and when students call in, they are transferred supposedly to the Pace Financial Aid Center, but in fact it happens to be Sallie Mae people working there. So I think from a disclosure standpoint, this is quite problematic, particularly given how the cost of college education have been rising at two or three times at least the level of inflation. So you know these issues, I think, are a little bit. I'm not saying that there's necessarily is something illegal going on, but I definitely am always in favor of more openness in these kind of arrangements.
Marcelo, how much do you think students actually know about this stuff? I mean, you're on a campus. I certainly remember that I was in college back in, you know, what is now becoming a Jurassic age, when credit card solicitations on campus weren't normal, but then they started phasing in. Is this something that students even think about, let alone talk about?
Well, I was in college in the early ice age, so I think that students have no idea, and I think that I concur with Robert that the more transparency, the better, and when you confound these offices and you confound the roles, there is really the potential of conflict of interest. So these need to be kept very, very separately. The universities need to offer students a whole array of possibilities in terms of lending, and these should be made very, very transparent so that everyone understands where the money's coming from, where the money's going to, and what are the returns? What are the returns the institution may be getting for setting up these special arrangements? My sense is that most students have no idea that this has been going on.
Callie, what do you think about the whole idea of colleges partnering with for-profit and, in some cases, government lenders to really just bring them in and, on the one hand, you could say help them. On the other hand, you could say exploit them. Where do you fall on that?
Well, it reminds me a little bit about what the credit card companies are doing in terms of interest. Just making money to make money off the backs of people for, you know, greed, really. And I'm appalled when I heard about it and read about it. You know, maybe I'd be in favor of it if at least it was ridiculous.
You know what, Callie? We are having some technical problems with your line, and we're going to have to.
Obviously, it's not working.
We're going to have to let you go. I'm very sorry, Callie. We're going to obviously check in with you later. Sometimes, you know, it's live radio and bad things happen. So, Robert, I'm going to give you the last word. You only have a minute left, but I apologize to Callie. We just couldn't stay with her on her line.
Point that Callie was just trying to make a lot of these lenders have the terms of the lending have changed over the years. These used to be purely nonprofit organizations. They've now switched. Like Sallie Mae used to be nonprofit; it is now a for-profit organization. And the terms of the loans and what and the flexibility that students have in terms of refinancing loans and things like that have changed as well, very much in favor of the lender. So I think this is actually a good time to take a look at the entire student financing issue.
It is a big issue, and we will return to it. Robert George, editorial writer at the New York Post, Marcelo Suarez Orozco, professor of globalization and education at NYU, and Callie Crossley, who we couldn't hear enough of. But thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.